this on? Oh, it's on. Hello. How are you guys enjoying everything so far? Okay, so we have something very, very special for you today. We're going to be doing a live podcast with Darian from Am I Allowed to Like Anything? Let me repeat that. Am I Allowed to Like Anything? Her podcast is amazing, and we're just honored to have her here speaking with Bernice McFadden and Miss Numa, because that's how you go, Miss Numa, all the things. So Darian, come on up. Let's start.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I am so happy and honestly a little bit speechless that you're all here. So thank you for being here. Thank you to Glory. As Glory said, my name is Darian Harvin. I have a podcast called Am I Allowed to Like Anything? And I talk to people about their work, their lives, and how they maintain their optimism in this world. I like to talk to people about the things that they're enjoying and the things that they're noticing in culture that they're enjoying. And why that is. And so that was one of the reasons why we felt like it would be an amazing opportunity to take this time to talk about Black books that are being optioned into films or are being turned into films. And I actually also want to talk about how some are being placed into longer web formats or into TV shows, or they're being picked up by Netflix. So I have two writers, authors, directors here with me that I'm really, really excited to introduce. But before I do, I just wanted to give a big shout out to Spoke. And you've probably noticed their table outside. If you haven't, definitely go and say hello to them. Spoke is kind of like the Pandora of podcasting. It's an app that you can download, and it's a place where you can discover podcasts. They create a bunch of like really great curated lists, and then you can share them on social media. So I just want to give a big thank you to them. And I want you also right now to think about one of your favorite Black books, or maybe one of your favorite films that was once a book, or one of your favorite books that was turned into a film. And I want you to start to think about, how did that even happen? And what is that process like? And that's kind of what we're going to talk about today. But first, I would like to introduce Bernice McFadden. Woo! I'm gonna tell you a little bit about who she is and what exactly she's doing right now, although I'm sure you already know lots of it. But Bernice is a best-selling author, and she's also the visiting assistant, or the assistant professor of creative writing at Tulane University right now. And she's also a Brooklyn native. And she is known for some of her novels, Sugar Glory, and one of her latest releases is The Book of Harlan. It's her 2016 novel that was awarded the 2017 NAACP Image Award for Outstanding Literary Work Fiction. And the book, if you are not familiar with it, if you haven't read it yet, is a book in which a jazz musician is imprisoned at a concentration camp after he migrates from the U.S. to Paris in the 1930s. And it was put as simply miraculous by the Washington Post, and it was also a notable work of 2016. And right now, as of August, it was announced that The Book of Harlan is going to become a feature film. I think that's a round of applause right there. And I'm also really excited to introduce Numa Perrier. Numa is a writer, director, actress, and also the co-founder of Black and Sexy TV. She's been one of the leading forces at the online channel since its inception, and she's responsible for ushering in projects from script to screen and also acting as a showrunner and a co-showrunner on several of the network's hit series. Numa's first feature solo debut is going to be Jezebel, which is a true story based on her bizarre sexual coming of age in Las Vegas as she worked at one of the first ever online fetish sites. The story will also become a book that's going to be published in 2018, and Numa is currently fundraising to finish her production of Jezebel on GoFundMe. Yes. So before we get started, I kind of just want to note that both of you, I feel like you're both working on a film at different stages and in different capacities and also in different ways. Numa, you are currently fundraising for a film that you've written and you produced and will be published as a book. And then also, Bernice, you come from a place where you have already had your book published and it's been optioned as a film. And so just to also give the audience, because I really like to be incredibly transparent about how I like to form these conversations, I want to talk to you both a bit about your projects. And I want people to get an understanding of what it means to create a work of art and it to take on another form of that. And so before we get into any broader questions that kind of like have to do with film. And I think honestly, one of my first questions for you, Bernice, really had to do with just the depiction of the historical time. Like what, it's a simple question, but what was your true interest in thinking about people of color and particularly a black man going through living in Europe during the Holocaust? What made you want to depict that?
So back in 2004, I went to a book signing in Bed-Stuy at Brownstone Books, if you all, any of you remember Lewis, yeah. And this gentleman was there and he'd written a book called The Black Holocaust. And it wasn't what I thought it was. And he wrote about African Americans and Africans in death camps in Germany. And I was like, what? I was never taught that. And how many other folk, you know, are unaware of it? And so it just stayed with me. And I started researching. And I really didn't think in the beginning that I was going to write anything about it. It was something that I was just doing for myself.
Yeah.
It was a personal project. And I started sharing the information with people in my circle, and everyone was ignorant to the fact. I was like, well, no, I have to write about this.
Okay.
So it's a small part, but it's also a really major part of the story.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's where it came from.
Okay. And then I also wanted to know, and I guess kind of this is thinking ahead a bit, but as an author, did you feel like I would love for one of my books to be turned into a film? Was this something that has been a goal or on your radar, or did it kind of come from a place that really surprised you?
No, every single book.
Yeah.
Every single book. All the time, every day.
Yeah.
And and not to say, I mean, Sugar's been optioned, I think, twice, but nothing has happened. You know, option is really weird, and you're probably going to be able to speak to that. So, yes, I want to see my characters on the screen. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so start praying for me, please.
Numa. I want to talk to you about, let's first talk about the title Juzbo, because this is your story. And so let's start with the title and why you chose it, and then let's talk a bit about more of the details of what you've actually done so far with the film.
Okay, everyone is asking me why I chose the title Jezebel, and it's so funny because I don't have a very deep reason for it. As a kid, I was always changing my name. I was adopted, so I have more than one name. And every school that I would go to, I would kind of try to take on another name and pretend I was that person. And I just always did that. And Jezebel was a name that I liked. I never tried to have that be my name, but I just always had collections of names that I liked the sound of. Like Vera is a name that I like. Isabel, I also liked. Jezebel, I liked that name. And then there was a Sade song, Jezebel, as well. And I felt like those lyrics really resonated with me. And so when I started working on the fetish site, that's the name that I chose. It just, it all kind of came together that way.
Okay. And I feel like a lot of people will also be interested to know is how did you start to work at the fetish site?
Well, you'll see in the movie or when you read in the book, but my sister, who was a phone sex operator at the time, convinced me to do it.
I see.
Introduced me to it.
Okay.
And so the story is really about our sisterhood and how this was not really your normal way of two sisters taking care of each other. And how she gave me permission to kind of enter a space that would normally be horrifying to others.
I see. also am curious about timing too. I think that's something that really stood out to me, even when you have a short blog post about Jezebel and you were like, I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. You're like, I am going to work on this film, I'm going to write this book, and it felt very much like now is the time, or there was a sense of urgency around that. And I was just curious, I don't know if there was anything really behind that for you.
Yeah, it's been nearly 20 years since I was in that line of work. Mm-hmm. So I've had the story in me for a long time, and probably a good 10 years of being very ashamed of it and not sharing that with anyone.
Okay.
And then another 10 years of feeling like, oh, I should tell the story. And starting to write a few pages, and in the last panel, someone said something about it was just working up the nerve to actually start writing about it. And then becoming frustrated because I had started making other films, and then all of the work that I've also done at Black and Sexy TV, all of that led up to me feeling more ready, mm-hmm. and also feeling more urgent because this is a story that I did not want to pass me by, my own story.
Yeah.
So that sense of urgency really came up. And then in Hollywood land, there's a whole festival season and cycle that starts at the top of the year with Sundance. And I didn't want to miss that cycle again by not having a feature film to offer for their consideration. So that really put a fire under my ass, too.
Okay. I also want to talk quickly about fundraising, your fundraising for your film. And I think that people, if you've never fundraised, I think specifically right now on a Kickstarter or a GoFundMe or whichever platform that you choose, it takes a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It's not like you just put it up and people come.
That's a whole other panel.
Yeah,
but
so
yeah.
I don't know, for you, what would you credit maybe like the majority of, because you've raised past your limit. Your goal was to raise 10K and you've raised 13K so mm-hmm. far. Do you feel like there was maybe a specific, what do you feel like you did right?
Well, I really did not want to do another crowdfunding campaign. I had done several with Black and Sexy TV because we needed it at that time. And it's treacherous. It's very hard, even when you have a crowd to fund that will fund you, it's hard. And I did not want to do it for Jezebel. I did not do any crowdfunding for the actual production of the film. But in the world of film, all kinds of crazy things happen. So many unexpected expenses came up. And it just came down to the wire where I was just starting to kind of bleed out. And I had to. So I just jumped in and I did what I've done on every crowdfunding campaign. I identified my crowd, which is everyone in my phone. And I just went through and I started texting every single person and letting them know that I had wrapped the film. A lot of them were aware that I was doing it and that now, you know, to get us past the finish line, that I needed more and I needed them to jump on board if they could and if they would.
Yeah.
And people were enthusiastic about that, I think, because the film was done. And the ones that didn't know that the film was already in the can, they were excited by that, and I think that gave them a sense of urgency to be really supportive. And so it's received overwhelming support, really.
That's awesome. So now that we've talked a little bit about both of your stories, I actually asked both of you to read an excerpt so that people could get an idea of I guess, what to expect a little bit. Bernice, would you mind going first?
So if you've read the book, you know that I use my real-life family as the characters. And this is what I imagined for my paternal grandmother. She was a dancer as a young woman before she got married and had children. The warm spring faded into a humid summer. Newly graduated from high school, but with no jobs available to them, Gwen and her friends whiled away the steamy summer on Coney Island's hot beach, splashing about in the salty blue Atlantic Ocean, gorging themselves on Coca-Cola, Nathan's famous hot dogs, and fried shrimp on a stick. At Steeplechase Park, they rode the Lindy Loop and Rolloplane with their hands stretched high above their heads, screaming themselves hoarse. On the Coney Island Cyclone, they favored the first or last car of the coaster because that's where they felt most intensely the blossoming sensation in the pit of their stomachs when the coaster dove over camel humps in the tracks. The girls didn't know what to call it, how to label that thing that felt so good. They just knew that they longed for it and worked to recreate that unnameable thing in the dead of night while hidden beneath bed sheets, fingers between their legs, prodding and stroking. The effort left them damp. The reward, however, was so much more than the amusement park ride could ever bring. When there was no more money for hot dogs, pretzels, and ice cream, they trolled the boardwalk in search of lost coins. Gwen's friends wouldn't touch the pennies they found tails up. It's bad luck, they warned her. That's silly, she said, plucking up the pennies and dropping them into her pocket. You'll see, her friends hummed. And yes, Gwen would.
So we talked a lot about your process so far, Numa. And I'm curious to know, because it's so different than your experience, Bernice. I'm wondering if you could talk about how you were approached.
Oh, for the film?
Yes.
So y'all know I live in New Orleans now. So this mystical, magical place. And back in, I want to say, late November, I received an email from my agent, who I just signed on with maybe 2 months earlier. And she said, there's this director, and he's interested in the Book of Harlem. I don't think he's right because X, Y, and Z or whatever. And I was like, I'm willing to have a conversation. Mm-hmm. So he sent me a few emails, and then we started FaceTiming, and it was like he was actually courting me, and not, you know, he's married with children, but it was that intense. And every time we would FaceTime, well, the first few times we would FaceTime, he was reading, he was reading what he had written down about how he felt about the book and the characters, and it brought me to tears a few times. It was that intense. And so we did this, we did this dance for months. He wanted it. I didn't say he couldn't have it. This is sounding like romantic, right?
And negotiations.
Yeah, you know. And so we would talk every weekend, and we talk about our lives, and we rarely spoke about the book. And this went on for a while. And you know, when people get married and you ask the couple, like, how did you know? And because he did this, he played the ukulele, or whatever she did. And he finally, we got back to the book, and he said, you know, in my head, the movie would unfurl this way. And it was the exact same way I had it in my head. And that was the moment. I was like, you're the one. So that's how it happened.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, that's actually amazing. Okay. Numa.
You can't say who it is.
Oh, yeah. It's Mark Tadari Hodges, and he's actually Zimbabwean, is that right? Okay. And raised in England, from the Shona tribe, and he's been doing a lot of work here in the States, and he lives out in Cali, so I'm excited.
So I read that you would be involved in, like, as a producer within the film, and so I'm curious, you literally just signed the papers, I've seen the tweet and everything, yeah. So it's incredibly new, but what's kind of the next step?
Well, he is actually in the midst of a project right now.
Okay.
So we're not, you know, he's doing his thing, I'm teaching and trying to write. So I don't think anything's going to happen until the end of the year when he's ready. He wants my feedback on the script, and I'm aware that I'm an artist, he's an artist, he's a creative, I'm a creative. We're going to have different visions. And I want him to have his vision. I've had mine with the book. And so it's not my movie. Mm. It's his, and I want him to have that.
Yeah.
So I will actually, if he has a question or if he wants to pass things by me, absolutely. But I don't want to have both feet in because I don't want to be disappointed.
That's actually a really good point, because I often feel like the first thing we do after we see a movie that's an adaptation of a book is we go, well, it's not the same thing. And it doesn't seem like you're incredibly invested in the movie being exactly like the book. Okay.
I mean, I think if I was doing it alone, yes. Mm-hmm. But that's his thing, and I want him to have it.
Okay. Yeah. And you, Mom, I'm curious, even for you, do you feel like, and I also think it's really important for people to know, too, that you have already shot a lot of your movie.
Yes, we're in the editing process right now. So, we're almost done.
Mm-hmm. And so do you envision that the book will be the same reflection of the movie, or are you invested in it in that way? It seems like it would be a totally different process.
It is a different process. Yeah. The book will be a little more of kind of segmented essays, going over, you know, different memories and things that hit me hard. Whereas the script writing of it had to have a certain pacing and cadence to it. I feel I can be a little more lyrical with the book.
Okay.
So yeah, they will feel different.
How'd you meet your crew? How'd you meet the people who worked with you on this? How'd you meet the director, the shooter, the editor even?
I'm the director. Yeah. and a lot of the crew are people who I've worked with at Black and Sexy. My editor is Brittany Lyles, who's edited. She's one of a team of editors we have who's done a lot of great work. My DP, my director of photography, Brent Johnson, we had been working together pretty closely for the last year or so on many episodes of Sexless, and mostly Sexless together. So we had kind of a shorthand way of being around each other. So it was important for me to have him on board. And his number one guy, Gray Morrison, as our gaffer, helping to light all of the scenes. And the sound guy, Kevin Vargas, also from Black and Sexy.
Okay.
It was really, really great to be able to bring people on and find a way to straddle that, because Black and Sexy production is always happening. We had a little bit of a reprieve of 2 weeks where we weren't filming for Black and Sexy, and I saw that as my opportunity to jump in there and be able to do Jezebel. But a lot of the crew are people who I've worked with, and we have that respect for each other's artistry, so it was a pretty easy transition to bring them in onto Jezebel as well.
Okay. Are you ready to read some of Jezebel for us?
I am. I'm ready. Okay, everybody. Close your eyes.
Okay, I'm ready to close my eyes. I hope you're all closing your eyes.
Close those eyes. Okay, here we go. Let me see your body. He said it so plainly I could only react with a what? Even though I had clearly heard him. Do you want to work or not? Work, yes, I want to work. This is what it required. I knew another second of patience would not be allocated. I stood and began to remove my clothing. I had on a cheap cotton dress, making the task reasonably simple. He pointed to my panties, made a downward gesture. I shimmied them towards my knees. He took me in, again, so plainly, clinical. Turn. I turned. He lingered. I waited. All right, you can start tonight. He began running off rules and regulations in a monotone blur. I felt flush, but it wasn't embarrassment. It was arousal. I said, thank you. My formality surprised me, the politeness in the midst of vulgarity. I was relieved for his approval. His eyes cast downward again, re-examining. You're gonna need to shave that, though. It's not the 70s. I involuntarily covered myself. Now I was embarrassed. Let's go. I tried to recover as I followed him into the next room.
I feel like I got kind of lost in that. I'm glad I closed my eyes.
So did I, yeah. So did I.
Okay, so now I want to talk a bit more about Hollywood mm-hmm. in this moment that it feels like we're in. Certainly, there have been books, black books, that have been adapted into films. But there is a difference in the air now, it seems, for me. Does it feel that way for either of you? Yes, no, and then I want to know why.
I feel like we've been in this place before.
Okay.
I love that response.
Yeah, we say this every decade, don't we?
Yeah.
Oh, it's different.
Or how culture?
For me, for my generation, with how Stella got her groove back. It's like, this is it. It's this. And then something happens. Then it's just like it goes away. And then some other, you know, big black blockbuster happens. We're like, this is it. This is our time. So, and I don't mean to sound cynical. I hope it is. It needs to be. But I don't know.
I don't think that's cynical. I think that there are a lot of different aspects of culture that like repeat themselves. Mm-hmm. And if anything, I think it's good that we use that as context to help us understand why it's happening now. I mean, we see it happening with TV right now too. You know, I don't think this is the first time that there's been a golden age of black characters and black faces and women and men too, who I can identify with on camera. Mm. So, what about for you, Numa?
Yeah, I think that it may be here to stay because the entire landscape has really shifted to me. I mean, I'm approaching 40. I'm old enough to have been around for like maybe two waves that have come by where you've had little spurts of seeing more black people anywhere, you know, creatively, and then not. So I've seen it come, I've seen it go away, I've seen it come, I've seen it go away. So this would be the third time seeing it come. And I think that it's here to stay because of social media, really, because the Well-Read Black Girl Festival exists now, where things like that, there's an infrastructure that's starting to happen in the virtual space that is making us be undeniably seen and heard in many, many different creative spaces. So for that, I feel that there's a longevity to what's happening now.
There was also something else I wanted to talk about too, because there's films, but my friend brought up a good point that had to do with TV also being a force right now. And I'm curious if you see, and I also was trying to think of some as well, to talk strictly about the transition or kind of like the channel from a black book coming to a feature, but also what about a black book coming to Netflix or to Amazon? Or, I don't know, do you see us infiltrating that space in a new way? Have you thought about that at all? I don't know, I'm just curious in general.
Yeah, I think it can infiltrate all spaces. There's a book that was just, I don't know who wrote the book though. Who wrote Love Country? Who wrote that horror anthology?
I don't know.
Anyways, Misha Green is adapting it, who is black, for HBO, and Jordan Peele is producing it. I don't know who the author is.
Lovecraft? Yeah. Lovecraft Country.
You almost had it.
Yeah, I almost had it. I was so close. Shout out to Misha and Jordan. Yeah, so that's one that I know that's coming to the TV space.
Okay.
I think that it's a great space for literature to cross over to. They did it with Big Little Lies, which is not black, but it's been successfully done. And I think that it's a great way, I think, for books to be adapted, maybe in a way better than a feature film, because you have so much more storytelling. You have so many more miles that you can go with a series and you can go with a feature, trying to cram everything in, and everyone's just pissed off that the moments that they savored are not landing in the film at all, or not even addressed at all in the film. In a series, you have a lot more time to go even deeper than maybe the novel did. So I think that right now, it's all about people just want to find stories that really move them and that feel fresh, and there's so much of the same thing happening over and over. So there's kind of this hidden source of material, which are books. And those books are being plowed through now. And everyone's looking for, you know, that special diamond that they can do something with. And I think that really does apply to the TV space and will more and more.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, has this conversation about how in this criticism, more criticism of how Hollywood is not having more diverse casts, or they're not telling enough of the different kinds of stories. Has this conversation affected the way that you have decided to create your work, for you, this film, and how you've decided to work with someone to turn your book into a feature film? Is it something that you've talked about with him?
We've not spoken about that yet.
Okay.
He's very aware of how I feel about very specific things about the book.
Okay.
So he actually sent me a photo and bio of an actor that he thought would be perfect as the lead character, Harlan. And I just said, you know, I watched his clips and I was like, he's a fabulous actor, but he's too light. And so let's not do that.
Okay.
I mean, Harlan is right. Harlan is a dark man. Let's stay there. And I went to see Issa Rae a few nights ago. She was at Dillard, and she spoke about that. She said the two lead characters in the show, Molly and herself, are dark-skinned women. And HBO was like, "Well, why don't we do light-skinned, dark-skinned?" She's like, "Dark-skinned women get along." Like that's, you know, and to have to say that. To have to make that statement, it just blew me away. Because I don't, in our own circles, this is just like dark skin, light skin. I can't have too many light skin friends. Right. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But people who, the gatekeepers, they think that way.
Yeah.
So. Damn, okay. HBO. Man, and HBO is really supposed to be one of the more progressive networks out there. So I'm really saddened to hear that.
Have you heard that... HBO, this is what I've been hearing, but this is your world, so that they're looking for more projects that highlight Black lives.
We had a deal at HBO for a web series, The Couple, in 2014. Clap. And at the time, I know that was part of their mandate. They were looking for a lot of very specific things, not just what I heard when we were there was that they were looking for something that felt Black and male. You know, they wanted something that felt, you know, some Black men. I don't know. Just notes I got. Just,
you know,
they liked, there was an episode in The Couple that the executive really liked where the guy friends come over and they're interacting with my character, and the executive loved that episode and wanted to do more with that and wanted to see more of the guys and things like that. So, yeah, they have, you know, every network has different mandates and things that they're doing. At Black and Sexy, you know, one of the mandates there, the biggest mandate there is to show Black people everyday lives, being beautiful, sexy, vulnerable, awkward, nuanced, everything.
Right.
And so every network has their mandates, but I think we are in a season of Black right now when it comes to Hollywood, and we should all take advantage of it as much as we can.
Yes, take advantage of it as much as we can. Okay, so I have one segment in my podcast as we start to close out. It's called the Plus One segment, and it's kind of just going back to the theme of really why I started it, about specifically shouting out a person, place, thing, or experience that you're really loving right now. I told you guys it could be within the theme of our conversation or not. So now I'm wondering if you have thought about it.
She told me to think about that.
I thought about it. Okay, I'll go while you think, okay? So there's a writer-director who's starting to come to more prominence. Her name is Janixa Bravo, and she wrote and directed a feature film called Lemon that was at Sundance earlier this year and just came out in theaters. And I had the opportunity to meet her, not knowing anything about her except for that she's a beautiful, very stylish woman. And she told me she's a writer, she's a director. You know, I Googled her later.
Right, as we do.
I was like, oh, wow, you know, she's directed on Atlanta. She's directed on Divorce, the HBO series. She's amazing, and she's a great writer. And I just think you should all look her up and keep up with what she's got going on.
Amazing.
Okay. I think that I am really feeling and am very fascinated with the I don't know, what generation do you call them? The 20 to 30-year-olds?
Millennials.
Them. because you all are so intelligent. You're so much further along than I feel my generation was at that point. And I am just trying to sap up or, you know, absorb everything that you all are putting out there, podcasts, essays, short stories. And I'm just fascinated with millennials.
I think that's so refreshing and nice to hear.
I mean,
I do.
There is the other side.
I know, there.
Because
no,
I have
sure.
a millennial child, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I get it. Like, I totally get it.
But I do appreciate that, those positive words about my generation. Okay, well, I want to close it out. I think we only have a minute left, and I feel like we covered a lot of ground. So I want to thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Yay. This one.